Well, my guest today, Dave Dayan, is a Los Angeles-based contributing writer, Salon, a weekly columnist for the Fiscal Times, and his articles have appeared in The New Republic, The American Prospect, The Guardian, Vice, The Intercept, and Huffington Post. Last week, his article in The American Prospect regarding protests in New York about a new austerity program for Puerto Rico that will rob its people of any last vestiges of self-government caught my eye, and I'm happy to have him on the phone to discuss it with me today. Welcome to Takes on the World, Dave Dayan.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for having me on the show.
If anyone thinks colonialism, the American variety, is a thing of the past, the way that the Obama administration and Congress decided to deal with Puerto Rico's debt crisis was surely a reminder that it's alive and, well, sick, as your article describes it in American Prospect. Tell us about PROMESA, the acronym, and what it promises the people of Puerto Rico.
Sure. PROMESA, which is Spanish for promise, was the legislation that was worked out to try to deal with this situation with Puerto Rico's debt. Now, for the last decade, Puerto Rico has been mired in a recession, really a depression, and they papered over that. Successive governments from both sides of the aisle papered over that with issuing debt to cover their obligations, and this debt was very favored by Wall Street banks because it had certain tax advantages attached to it. And they ran up this debt and ran up this debt, and it became unpayable, as the governor of Puerto Rico said last year, about $70 billion. So the Obama administration decides that the only way to deal with this is through legislation. And in the past, we've seen these kinds of fiscal control boards go out to manage the fiscal matters of a municipality, for example, New York or Washington, D.C., these kinds of fiscal boards were set up. They were always attached with some funding, some near-term bridge funding for that locality to get them back on their feet and to achieve some sort of economic stability. In this case, the Obama administration, again, said there's no alternative. We have to do a fiscal control board. We have to do something for the people of Puerto Rico. They attach no money to it. So this is only a usurpation of the local governance in Puerto Rico without any kind of money for economic development or changes in law that restrict and really create harm toward the Puerto Rican economy, all of which were passed by Congress. None of that is present. It's just an austerity board. This board, the members have been announced. There are seven members on this panel. It was designed to have a Republican majority on the panel. None of these people are elected officials from Puerto Rico. In fact, the governor of Puerto Rico is on the panel, but as an ex officio member, he doesn't get a vote. So these seven members all have ties to the banking industry. One of them is a very prominent critic of public pensions, which is one of the points of contention in Puerto Rico in terms of whether or not they're going to be cutting those benefits that people earned over their lifetimes. This is really pretty disastrous. And the people that I spoke to for the piece really lay some of the blame at the feet of the administration for essentially negotiating with one hand tied behind their backs. Once they said, there's nothing we can do except legislation that creates this control board, they sort of put the fate of Puerto Rico in the hands of the Republicans who control Congress. And what they came up with is really going to be devastating for the people of Puerto Rico.
It sounds very much like what happened to Greece, that the debt relief, I mean, the debt relief was designed to pay the creditors, not take care of the people. The people did
Absolutely.
Not create the debt, yes.
Absolutely. And you know, the control board has the opportunity to engage in negotiations with creditors who hold the $70 billion in Puerto Rican debt. However, that's seen as a last resort. The idea is to pay the creditors as much as possible through cuts to the budget. That's you know, the person who was on the staff of Representative Rob Bishop, who wrote PROMESA, said very candidly in a discussion a couple weeks ago that this is not a debt restructuring bill, because that's how it was sold. The Obama administration said, this is the only way that we're going to get debt relief for Puerto Rico. This is the one vehicle, get on the train or not. This person who actually had a hand in writing the bill says, no, this isn't a debt relief bill. This is a bill about getting Puerto Rico fiscally responsible, quote unquote, which is code for austerity. And debt restructuring, that is all a last resort. It's much on the side. This is about squeezing as much money out of Puerto Rico as possible to give to creditors, many of whom purchased this debt at a severe discount years and years after it was already in circulation. There is, much like Greece, there are so-called vulture funds that specialize in buying debt from distressed governments at a severe discount and then trying to get full value for that debt, making a huge payday in the process. We saw this in Greece. We saw this in Argentina, which recently paid off a lot of these vulture funds at huge returns on investment. We're talking about thousands of percentage points. We saw this in Detroit to some extent. And now they're going after Puerto Rico. And it's many of the same hedge funds, the same vulture funds that are actually going around the world and doing this. And there's been analysis showing that the holders of Puerto Rican debt in terms of these hedge funds also held Argentine debt, Greek debt, debt from Detroit.
And they have the most wonderful tax breaks of any the corporate pirates in our country.
Yes, yes. One of the ways, foolishly, that the Puerto Rican government has thought that they could get back on their feet economically is by essentially turning the island into a tax haven, and in an attempt to attract billionaires and investments and corporations. This has not worked out. It's just created this two-tiered society in Puerto Rico, where you do have these billionaires who aren't giving back to the country in which they live and prosper. And then you have the desperately poor on the other side who aren't, you know, there's no economic development coming out of these massive tax breaks. It's just a gift that's being given to people who make their money elsewhere and then go to the island and hide away in these gated communities. They're not bringing jobs. They're not bringing opportunity. And they're certainly not contributing to Puerto Rico whatsoever. And in fact, some of the individuals who are responsible for these really bad tax incentives are on the board, this fiscal oversight board. In fact, one of the individuals, Carlos Garcia, wrote the legislation that made Puerto Rican bonds much more attractive and accelerated the process by which the Commonwealth went further and further into debt. And he's on the board now, so he's certainly not going to want to say that debt, which many in Puerto Rico said is illegitimate, that it was unconstitutionally issued. He created the circumstance by which that debt was issued. So certainly he's not going to be amenable to that state.
You know, it's interesting. I mentioned before I called you that today is a 524th anniversary of Columbus's arrival in San Salvador, and November,
right.
November 19th of next year, he arrived in Puerto Rico, but with a massive, and actually, I think in 1513, Puerto Rico became the headquarters of the Inquisition. It sounds like a continuous plunder of this island, going back from Columbus's arrival to the present day.
Certainly, you've had hundreds of years of this in Puerto Rico, and it is Columbus Day. It's also my mom's birthday, so hi, Mom. But it's certainly accelerated in recent years. The island has always been sort of, it had this odd hybrid status with regards to the United States. It wasn't a state. It wasn't an independent nation. It was this protectorate or territory or commonwealth or whatever you want to call it. And the problem is, you know, there was a 1996 law that was changed in Congress, sponsored by the Clinton administration, as a debt relief measure for the United States. It was a way to lower the budget deficit. And it eliminated some incentives for manufacturing within Puerto Rico. And in the years that incentive program was up, Puerto Rico almost never had a recession. Once it phased out over a 10-year period, it was finally gone by 2006. Since 2006, the economy in Puerto Rico has not expanded. So there's a pretty one-to-one relationship between, you know, what's been done in the aftermath. And it's just that's just the latest in a long line of inequities in terms of Puerto Rico. Even though these are American citizens, they get a much lower Medicaid reimbursement rate and Medicare reimbursement rate on the island. They aren't eligible for benefits that citizens in the U.S. are, for example, the earned income tax credit. There are shipping rules that disallow the direct move of foreign ships to the island of Puerto Rico for in terms of commerce. They have to go to a U.S. port, change into a U.S. flagship, and then go to Puerto Rico. This is why goods are so expensive on Puerto Rico, even though this is an island with a huge amount of poverty. Other commonwealths don't have that condition, like the U.S. Virgin Islands, which isn't too far away in the Caribbean. There's been just this systematic series of problems with regard to Puerto Rico and how the island is engaged with relative to the United States. And, you know, when I talk to people on the island, they say, we don't owe this debt. You, the United States, who put us in this situation, you owe us. And what you're giving back in the aftermath of this is you're taking away our self-governance. You're putting in place this austere budget that is just going to continue the brain drain out of Puerto Rico, thousands of people leaving the island on a weekly basis, large percentages, particularly the professional class that actually has the ability to move and go into Florida or Chicago or New York or wherever. I think a doctor a day is leaving the island. The emergency rooms are absolutely clogged because there's a shortage of personnel and staff. And you have an epidemic of the Zika virus going on at the same time. So just a host of issues with respect to Puerto Rico, and they're certainly not getting a lot of help from the U.S. government to deal with this.
This is certainly a description of a colonial status. Mm-hmm. But one thing, though, that has impressed me about Puerto Rico is that there has long been a movement for independence. It has never died. People have gone to mm-hmm. prison. People have been killed. And what you report is the first meeting of the PROMESA board was, ironically, the Alexander Hamilton
right.
Courthouse. Hamilton got a nice whitewashing in that play in Broadway, I'd say. But to have it there.
Written by Lin-Manuel Miranda, a native Puerto Rican.
Ironically, huh? I wonder how he stands all this. But I'll tell you that there were mass protests there. And may you tell about that and the likelihood
sure.
of protests going to take place when this board actually meets in Puerto Rico.
Absolutely, yeah. As you note, Puerto Rico has a history of not just pro-independence movements, but also just resistance. You look at the naval operations on the island at Vieques, which after very dogged resistance, those ended. So there is this activist fervor within Puerto Rico. It has been for as long as we can remember, and that has definitely transferred to this particular situation. As you noted, there were protests in New York City. That meeting only lasted a half hour, and it was marked by interruptions all over the place, even though this was thousands of miles from Puerto Rico. Just the fact, the very symbolism that you hold the first meeting of this board about what to do about Puerto Rico in lower Manhattan, close to Wall Street, I think cannot be lost on this entire situation. It's the board does plan to go to Puerto Rico for a meeting in mid-November, and they are going to meet much more ferocious resistance, I would say, there. A meeting put on by the Puerto Rico Chamber of Commerce to talk about PROMESA and engage business men and investors was actually shut down by protest groups within Puerto Rico. There's one called Promises Are Over, which has been very active. A federal judge who sat on the island, who was actually a Reagan appointee, has said that in the wake of PROMESA, there needs to be organized civil resistance, which is just quite remarkable that you would have a federal judge say this. He said this in remarks in a speech. And I think that's that kind of awakening is what's happening in Puerto Rico, to realize that if there was ever any question about whether this was a colony of the United States, that has ended now with what we've seen with PROMESA, the responsibilities that have been given to this control board, the fact that no economic development was added to it, the fact that it's not a debt restructuring bill, it's an austerity bill. This has really enlightened people on the island. That's the true situation of Puerto Rico. And so that meeting in mid-November should be very, very interesting.
I noticed also in your article, it mentions one of the things that this board is trying to do is to allow Puerto Rico to re-enter the credit market and borrow more.
That's one of its main goals. That's one of its main goals. And I would argue that, the other goals of this are to privatize these public operations and services within Puerto Rico. And Puerto Rico just had this huge blackout where 1.5 million people were without power for several days. And that's largely because the electric authority, which is state-run, has been completely defunded and was operating with, gum and paper clips for about 30 years. But it creates and presents the argument that you need to privatize it and get private investment in there to manage that system, because obviously the government can't work. Well, the government can't work if you don't give the government any money. I think that privatization is one of the major opportunities that investors are seeing out of this crisis. And the other one, which we talked about, is to create this sort of haven playground for the rich. And those are very, almost explicit goals of what's going to come out of this crisis. And there's not a lot of room for the 4.5 million citizens of Puerto Rico in that discussion. And that's why you're going to see, a lot of demonstrations and protests around it.
Well, it seems that there's constantly been a pressure on Puerto Ricans to emigrate to the United States to seek work, also to join the U.S. Army, which was one of the, when I was in the Army, there were a number of Puerto Rican soldiers. It was the first place and the only place that they could get anything like something close to equal treatment. It wasn't totally equal treatment, but it was better than in larger society. And this, it seems like this austerity program is in a way designed to force more immigration from Puerto Rico to the mainland.
Well, that's certainly going to be the result. As we talked about, there already has been in the past 2 years massive emigration out of Puerto Rico. And it should be noted that the austerity has already begun. I mean, schools have been closed. Thousands of workers public workers have been put off their jobs. The sales tax has increased. That's also a form of austerity when you you're effectively lowering real wages when you increase taxes on particularly regressive taxes like sales taxes. That's a form of austerity. You're trying to balance the budget on the backs of the poor who need, spend a larger share of their income on those necessities. It's already there, and that's why you're already seeing people move away, because these are American citizens. They can move to Orlando or New York City, and if they have skills, they can apply those skills and have those professional credentials. They're doctors, they're lawyers, they can practice that. On the mainland, the difference is that they're the ones who are able to actually have the funds and the wherewithal to leave, and the poor don't have that luxury. They don't have that possibility. I was told by one person who travels often to the island that the hardest thing to find on the island is a suitcase, because they're just being bought up and bought up over and over again, and from people who are fleeing the island. And what you're going to end up with is just a have and have not situation to an extreme degree. You're going to have these millionaires and billionaires who pay no taxes in their island encampments, and you're going to have this massive poor with nobody in the middle and very little for those people to do. And it's a really terrible, tragic situation that's going on.
Well, speaking of those rich people, I would like you to go over the backgrounds of the people who were appointed to this control board to determine the life of the people of Puerto Rico, because their backgrounds are quite interesting, and they all, it's like self-dealing, if nothing else. Perhaps you could tell us about some of them.
Yeah, absolutely. The seven members really, and they were chosen by a process whereby six of them were chosen off of lists that were provided by members of Congress, four by the Republicans, two by the Democrats, and then President Obama got to select one. So the cake was baked that it was going to be a pro-Republican majority on this control board, but all of them, Democrat or Republican, seem to have specialties in high finance rather than economic development. Jose Carrion was selected as the chairman of this control board. He is a scion of one of the biggest, most prominent families on the island. His father ran Banco Popular, which is the most important bank on the island. His cousin does now. His sister is the wife of Puerto Rico's representative in Congress, Pedro Pierluisi. They have been seen as this power couple who have Pierluisi introduces legislation that would benefit the clients of his wife. His wife is a investment banker and a consultant to Wall Street banks. Carlos Garcia and Jose Ramon Gonzalez. They were both executives of a bank, Santander, that actually issued loans to the island with these huge interest rates. I mean, there's a report out of the Roosevelt Institute that effectively call these payday loans. The interest rates were over 300%. And those two worked at Santander when they were giving out these loans to Puerto Rico. Another thing they did was they sort of refinanced old Puerto Rican debt. So it was like this constant refi and making fees all in the process and building up the debt that Puerto Rico owed. And they've actually, Santander has actually been cited and fined for reselling some of this debt without telling the individuals they were reselling it to that there were risks involved in, buying up this resold Puerto Rican debt from an island that has very little ability to pay it back. So, you know, these are financiers. These are, you know, in the case of Garcia and Gonzalez, they're practically creditors who are now in charge of how much the creditors are going to get. So figure it out. I mean, just do the math on what's going to happen there. And the other one that I point out, or like to point out, is a Republican appointee named Andrew Biggs. Now, he's not Puerto Rican, but his entire career, he's a fellow from the American Enterprise Institute, and his entire career has been about privatizing social insurance programs and cutting them. He was on a key member of the National Economic Council when George W. Bush was trying to privatize Social Security. He has endorsed in many papers the cutting of public pensions, refunding public pension payouts to taxpayers instead of the people who earned the benefits. And here he is on this board as the only person with real experience in that field. And Puerto Rico has an issue with their pensions, which are, you know, have been unfunded over the years by successive governments. And you know what Andrew Biggs is going to say as a remedy to solve that problem. And it's not going to be in the interests of pensioners. And it's just very clear that the island, this control board, is going to privilege the payouts to creditors over the Puerto Rican people. And you see it in sort of investment analysis of the fallout of the control board selection. Right after the selection, you had these investor groups say, that you know, this group is creditor friendly, that it's a good time to buy Puerto Rican debt. You know, this is really sort of the tell here, that if the investors know that the board is going to be friendly to their interests, then, you know, the game is up.
You could say it's predator friendly.
Absolutely.
Should be a new term, because that's what our administration has been, with smoke and mirrors, like it was anticipated when Obama became the nominee back in 2008. Some people are still drinking that Kool-Aid, not realizing what he has done in his office as a deporter in chief and so on, and putting lipstick on a pig.
Absolutely, this is going to be part of his legacy. I mean, here are people in trouble who were victimized by financial instruments beyond their control. We saw this in the foreclosure crisis too, right? Where we had people in this country who were victimized by financial instruments and financial situations. And there's a privileging of the banks and the creditors rather than the ordinary people who were victimized. The key chief negotiator of this from the administration was a guy named Antonio Weiss. And Antonio Weiss he was an investment banker for 20 years at a firm called Lazard. And he came into the administration. Initially, they wanted him in a confirmed position as the number three person in the Treasury Department. Elizabeth Warren waged a battle to keep him out. And so what the administration did is they brought him in as a counselor, which wasn't a confirmable position because he wouldn't be able to be confirmed. And so he came in as a counselor, and he ran this process of negotiating this bill. He's taken credit for it. He's been in the Huffington Post and Bloomberg, you know, bragging about how he was able to bring people to the table and bring people together and get this thing done. And by bragging about it, he's really taken ownership of it. And the administration has taken ownership of what has been done here. And Antonio Weiss is a perfect example of someone who came from Wall Street, and his idea of legislation that protects people has to do with giving Wall Street what they want, essentially. The leopard isn't going to change his spots, as Representative Luis Gutierrez, who's one of the biggest critics of this, essentially told me. The way he put it is, he said it's like expecting somebody who's Catholic all their lives to turn out Lutheran. You know, it's just not going to happen. You put someone who came from Wall Street in this situation to get this deal done. They're going to work with the people they know. They're going to do the things that they know to maximize creditors. And there may be an honest assessment on the part of Weiss that getting Puerto Rico up and running has to do with getting them to be able to borrow again. He probably thinks that. And the idea of returning to the markets being more important than the idea of developing the country's economy and making it sustainable and getting rid of the barriers that are put up artificially by the United States that prevent a sustainable economy in Puerto Rico. So Weiss has a lot to answer for. Barack Obama has a lot to answer for. This is going down a very bad road.
You mentioned Congressman Gutierrez and also Bernie Sanders had criticized it while it was happening.
Yes.
How many other – now it's you're no longer talking about that. How many members of Congress opposed that? Was Gutierrez alone? Was there any significant opposition?
The opposition wasn't significant. I think there were maybe – I don't have the figures directly with me, but there were a handful of opponents to this bill, but not too many. Even though the bill cuts the minimum wage for the island, for some people, some workers, it allows the board to enforce a ban on public employee strikes. It clearly enables the board to induce austerity measures. It does nothing around seeing whether or not this debt was unconstitutionally issued and therefore null and void. It's just a bad situation. And essentially, Barack Obama, Antonia Weiss, and the congressional leadership among the Democrats sort of put the rank and file up against the wall and said, you do this or you're responsible for the chaos that would ensue afterwards, as if there were no consequences for passing PROMESA. That's the way they sold it. And unfortunately, most rank-and-file Democrats went along with it.
Well, unfortunately, well, actually, PROMESA is so Orwellian, given what it promises.
But
one of the things that's always troubled me is that Puerto Rico has been kind of limbo for progressive forces in the United States who are concerned about issues going on around the world. And Puerto Rico doesn't quite fit in. The independence movement has never had a big support among non-Puerto Ricans. And I know there are differences, of course, among Puerto Ricans. Some would like to be a state like the other states, and there are certain reasons why the government doesn't want that to happen, obviously. But how would you account for this kind of general indifference, this state of limbo in which Puerto Rico always seems to be in?
There's no question that the status of the island is driving all of this. The fact that it's kept in this hybrid formation, it's not a state, it's not independent, it lives in these different worlds, that is what's stunning the ability for the island to go on. And the political factions, as you know, have really grown up around that. They don't have really Democratic and Republican parties in Puerto Rico. They have a pro-statehood, a pro-independence, and a pro-status quo set of parties. And the politics have always played out around that. And that's why, you know, it's been difficult to reach a consensus, because then it ties into the sort of very tribal kind of elements that we have with political parties around, you know, the future status. And of course, when you're talking about statehood, Republicans and Democrats have their own considerations about that and what that would mean for adding two Puerto Rican senators and one member of the House. And so it gets tied up in this politics that, you know, when the focus really should be on what's best for the people of Puerto Rico and in terms of making their own path in terms of how they want to be governed, how they want to see their future. That should really be at the forefront of this. Yes, hello.
Well, that's what your article brings out, and I hope people get a chance to read it. The title of the article on American Prospect is Protest Greet Puerto Rico Control Board. And Dave Dayan, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today on Takes on the World and bringing this issue into the public, because it's very important, and I'm sure we're going to hear about protests in Puerto Rico that are going to take place, and it'll be another struggle like it was over the island of Vieques to get the Navy out of Vieques. Maybe it's to get the Promesa out of Puerto Rico. So again, thanks so much for being our guest today.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. And this is Jeff Blankfort. Thanks very much for listening.